Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Namaste, yogis. This is Andrew Seeley here to welcome you to the Yoga Revealed podcast. Today, I have the privilege of interviewing Johnny Kest, one of the trailblazers for Vinyasa Yoga and a true yoga advocate for safe yoga teachings in gyms worldwide. He has opened the gates for yoga practitioners with his work as the yoga program director for Lifetime Fitness Gyms nationwide. From his early journeys in India to visit Sri Patabi Joyce, to his dedication to meditation and raising conscious children, Johnny reveals his passion for empowering teachers today.
You know, some teachers come in and they say, okay, let go of whatever you brought in. No, leave at the door what you don't want, you know, what happened earlier. In the sacred space, no, you just be with whatever you brought in. If you brought in, if you just smoked a cigarette, then feel that. Mm-hmm. If you just got into a fight with your, you know, significant other, then you just feel that. So it's not about trying to change or leave something out. It's just being present with
what is.
What is.
So get ready to focus within as Johnny shows us where to begin on this truly inspiring episode of the Yoga Revealed podcast.
It brings me great honor to bring on Johnny Kest today to the Yoga Revealed podcast and to share his knowledge and wisdom and how he's built his influence and his reach into bringing yoga to Lifetime Fitness and to actually creating a yoga sequence that has now been taught all over the United States and sharing that wisdom of yoga with the regular everyday gym goer. So it brings me great honor to have you on the podcast today, Johnny, to share your wisdom with our following here today. Yeah. So how's your day going thus far?
It's good. It's early.
Yeah, it's pretty early here. Yeah. But how's your stay been in Santa Monica?
It's been wonderful. I got a chance to visit my son, Jonah Kest, and my brother, Brian. Mm-hmm. And that was the main purpose for coming out here, was to connect with family, and everything else has been awesome.
Awesome. Yeah. I got a chance to take one of your classes. Jonah actually invited me to come alongside him and take your class to really get a feel for what you provide. And it was an absolutely amazing experience just being able to really drop into your wisdom and to drop into that class that was packed full of awesome people and that community right there at Lifetime Fitness. An absolutely beautiful community of yogis.
Yeah, we're really fortunate. Lifetime has been instrumental in bringing people from all walks of life. And, you know, there's a lot of people interested in yoga that do other kind of fitness activities. And Lifetime, I'm not sure exactly what the statistics are, but they're probably one of the largest corporations or organizations that introduce Americans to yoga. in the country.
Definitely, yeah. I could see that. I mean, it looks like, from my perspective, they've got a full gym, they've got a spa, salon, like everything inside of that one facility. And the yoga center was absolutely immaculate.
Mm-hmm.
But I kind of want to go into some of the start of your yoga and kind of like where your yoga began, because it seems like, you know, with your brother and with your son, like you guys are a family of yogis just sharing this light of yoga.
Yeah. Yes. You know, I think the seeds was planted a long time ago, but really my father is a very radical man and likes to turn things upside down. And over 35 years ago, he ventured into yoga and brought us with him.
Wow. So over 35 years ago, so that means how old were you, like 10?
I was 12, 13.
Wow. Wow. And so you started yoga pretty early on.
Yeah, I was extremely fortunate to be introduced to Ashtanga, Vinyasa yoga through David. My father met David Williams, who had brought Patapi Joyce to Hawaii. And that was the beginning of our journey, and our lineage was through Ashtanga Vinyasa with David Williams, Patapi Joyce.
So were you practicing daily at that time, or was it something that you kind of just did after school, or how did you take on to it at that time?
Well, it was during the summer, and Ashtanga is pretty strict. You at that point you had to commit to 3 days without break, except for moon days.
Wow.
And Saturdays. So my father woke us up every morning and we had to show up on our mats every day. So it started off pretty structured, intense experience for us.
Yeah. And early on, how did you take to that?
There was a little resistance. We weren't like early morning, rise and shine. but since it was a family thing, my dad brought all of us in. And it was Ashtanga's pretty vigorous. There's a lot of arm balances and fun stuff for young teenage boys to gravitate towards. So it was physically edgy and challenging that kind of caught our attention. And we wanted to experiment with that. So I thought that there wasn't that much resistance, a little bit. And then there was just a really small, intimate, beautiful yoga community in Maui, Hawaii, and that it kind of embraced us, because my father was trying to raise four, he was a single father trying to raise four wild boys.
Wow.
We're all about a year apart. So it was the yoga community kind of helped him do that, and we embraced it.
That's awesome. So it was you and your four brothers going to practice every single day with your father?
That's correct, yes.
Wow.
Yeah.
So that early in your practice, were you developing just the asana, or were you also developing some of the other limbs of yoga as far as like understanding the yamas and the niyamas and more of like the fundamental morals of the yoga?
For us, I'm pretty sure the doorway was marked physical.
Mm-hmm.
I remember hearing yoga citta vritti nirodha from my teacher, but it didn't really mean anything at that point.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't make that connection between calming and stilling the mind and yoga. Something felt good about it. Something was penetrating. I wasn't sure what. I don't think I made the philosophical connections or the deeper connection to meditation at that point, but it was absolutely a doorway.
Hmm. So what do you feel kind of took your practice to the next level in the sense of you understanding the depth of the yoga? At what time and point was it more than just the asana practice that attracted you?
Well, there was probably some frustration in that, because Ashtanga is a series. It's developed in four series.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, kind of a beginner, intermediate, and advanced. That's how it is, the physically. And some of the things that my body just could not get into. I was frustrated. With it, something just didn't feel right. It felt kind of like I was in a posture race. And as I climbed up the ladder, the postural ladder, some days were better than others, but even when I, you know, supposedly mastered the posture I was working on, it kind of felt like a bottomless bucket. Hmm. Like there was something missing, and there was something working, but there was something also kind of frustrating, missing. Like there's got to be something more to this. There's something, and then my father once again opened another doorway and introduced me to Vipassana meditation.
Hmm. Wow. So when was your first Vipassana meditation?
It was at 23 years old.
Wow. So you had been practicing during that time. At that time, were you also going to school? Had you done any extracurricular activities? What was your passion other than yoga?
Well, let's see. So I was introduced to yoga at 12 or 13 years old. And then shortly after, my dad is very, he's very radical. And when my father does something, he usually just focuses on it. He's very type A, very driven. Mm-hmm. And there was a point where he wouldn't even talk to you if you weren't in the Ashtanga yoga community. If you weren't doing Ashtanga,
he didn't want anything to do with you.
He was really, that was it. And so he wanted to study more. And so he took myself and my younger brother to India at the age of 15.
Wow. So you had already gone on your first India trip at 15?
Yeah, so at 15 years old, we went to Mysore and around the country studying not just Ashtanga yoga, but studying different meditations and just immersing ourselves in India.
So at the age of 15, you had gone on this trip to Mysore and you had discovered different types of meditation. Now at the age of 23, you had actually gone to your first Vipassana?
Yes.
Okay.
So that trip to India probably was the really tipping point for me, because when I came back home, my gym teacher said, why don't you share what you learned in India with the gym class? So once a week I started teaching yoga. That was my first teaching job, was in my high school.
Wow.
To my gym teacher. And that kind of created set me apart instead of me trying to fit in with the jocks or the geeks, or I sort of started creating my own law of attraction there. People were really interested in it.
Yeah. Like, wow, you were able to express your own passion.
Yeah. I was very passionate about, I loved my experience in India, and I was really excited to share it. And so that was my first teaching opportunity. And surprisingly, 35 years later, my gym teacher still comes to and practices yoga.
Wow. So that's amazing.
It's really amazing. And that's the one thing that I realized. There's a lot of different translations for the word yoga. Mm-hmm. But for me, the word yoga, the most, I would say, sticky translation for me is it means relationship. Mm. How to be in relationship and come out successful.
Mm. Definitely. Positive relationships through connection.
I mean, you can say that your word yoga means to yoke, to union, but it's really about relationships. And so yoga's, as I've seen, you've told me in your life, has made a lot of really positive connections.
Definitely.
Long-lasting ones.
That is the truth, yeah. And meeting your son, Jonah, when he came here to Santa Monica, he just reached out to me, and it was only my best intention to show him around and to introduce him to the community. And I completely resonate with that yoga is relationship, and to help bring forth greater relationship of positive expansion, because really we're all here to connect and to uplift one another, I feel, and to truly share our passions so that we can all co-collaborate and create together so that this world can be a more colorful representation of ourselves, of our truest self.
Mm.
Yeah.
Well said.
Definitely. Thank you. So after the age of 23 with doing this Vipassana, did you already have a teaching following? Were you already teaching at different studios, or was it just something that was a practice that you held near and dear to your heart?
No, I was just still practicing on my own and sharing it with friends and but there got to a point where every summer I went to Hawaii to be with my dad and mm-hmm. and of course we did our practice and but there was some point where I was always a little concerned that I might lose this practice. Having your own individual yoga practice and keeping it up is not easy. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of distractions, a lot of things come in your life. And part of me realized that there's a chance that I might lose this practice mm-hmm. of yoga meditation. So that was my real impetus, my real driving force to open up a yoga studio.
Ah.
And shortly after my meditation experience at 23 years old, I opened up my first yoga studio, which was really just one class. It was one class a week, and I called it the Center for Yoga.
An actual studio?
I subleased a room from a meditation center. So it was a meditation center. You know, the autobiographic of a yoga.
Yeah, I'm very familiar. There's
self-realization fellowship.
Yeah,
it was a self-realization meditation studio, and they let me sublease an hour for a week, and I called it the Center for Yoga.
That's awesome. So you were able to actually rent out this space in this, you know, beautiful meditation space, which is, you know, Paramahansa Yogananda's. Wow, where was this?
That's right. It was in Detroit, outside of Detroit, in a suburb of Detroit. And yeah, it was perfect. The energy was perfect. And I had a grand opening. It was only one class a week, and it was just me, and 100 people came. And to the grand opening, I still have it on videotape.
Wow.
And that was the beginning. And the whole force was, though, that now I have a community, so I won't lose my practice.
Mm-hmm.
And it just grew from there.
That's beautiful. So as your community grew, this was at the age of, what, 20, 24, 25 now?
Yeah.
And you started teaching. Where were you teaching at that time?
So up to that point, I was teaching at all the health clubs
mm-hmm.
around town. And I wanted to kind of
consider. And are you still in Michigan at this time?
Yeah, I'm still in Michigan.
Cool. And so you were teaching at the health clubs and kind of just getting out there, getting your name out mm-hmm. there. And then you started this grand opening at the Self-Realization Center. And then you just continuously hosted classes. When were you able to expand and really create a lifestyle out of this?
The biggest, if I was to mentor someone that was beginning their yoga career,
mm-hmm.
and it's something that you're already doing, to me, the biggest catalyst for building this lifestyle and this life for me was collaboration.
Mm-hmm.
Starting to collaborate with others. And that was when I arranged the first yoga conference.
Wow.
In Ann Arbor. And I invited all the teachers from around the country that had a tremendous influence either on me or I wanted to meet because I had heard of.
Mm-hmm.
And that collaboration really, something changed.
Yeah.
For me, there was an elevation in my life personally and professionally.
Mm.
So the more you can collaborate with others, the more I have found that you will experience growth and transformation.
Wow, that completely hits the spot because I found that to be true, very much so here. And in the collaborations that I've done, whether it be working with, you know, Acro Yoga to share the amazing light of connection and support that they do with my community, or even just as small as doing an Acro Yoga workshop with, you know, Jonah and, you know, touching the community here with that sense of connection on Valentine's Day. It's, you know, like that class was amazing. We packed the house and, you know, we're two straight guys teaching an acro yoga class to couples, and people are sitting there like smooching it up afterwards, and we like totally brought people to a place where they could truly connect. And
I spoke to someone who took that class, and they said they came out completely feeling yoga stoned. They said they were so high, and it just tickled me to see that you guys are, you know, giving people that way to connect.
Yeah, I mean, it's beautiful. Collaboration is key, I feel, especially nowadays in the community.
Huge.
Like, there's so many yogis now, and there's so many people who we can bring together to help spread and share yoga, because there's truly a yoga for everyone.
Yeah, there's that force out there of, or some idea where we think that we're constantly competing, and we end up isolating ourselves.
Mm.
But if you don't buy into that, there's really amazing collaborations out there that can bring people together and elevate everybody.
Definitely. That's the truth. So tell me more about in beginning to collaborate with other yogis. I mean, you started this festival in Ann Arbor. How did it go? And how many years after did you do it?
It was amazing, because up to that point, when I started doing this yoga conference, there was just the Yoga Journal conference, and they only invited certain teachers on their kind of
horizon.
And it was pretty much at that point, Iyengar Influence magazine.
Mm-hmm.
It's changed a lot since then.
Yeah.
But originally it was an Iyengar-based magazine, so they mostly invited Iyengar teachers and certain teachers. Where this, my yoga conference, I was able to bring up teachers that maybe not everybody really necessarily knew.
Yeah, give me some names.
Anna Forrest, for example.
Oh, wow, you had Anna Forrest at your conference?
Yeah, so she at that point, she was just teaching in a small studio in Santa Monica here.
Oh, wow.
And no one had ever heard of her.
Mm-hmm.
But she had come to visit me in Maui when I was living in Maui. She actually lived with my father and I.
Oh.
And taught me my first handstand.
So, wow.
So I'm like, I get to bring her to a conference. And another big person that wasn't big then, but is Paul Grilly. And I don't know if you've met him, but he's someone that I really encourage you to have an interview with.
Definitely.
Paul Grilly really has been the instrumental bringing yin yoga to America.
Mm.
Through his teacher.
Who was his teacher?
His teacher was, I believe, a Japanese man who studied the meridians.
Mm.
His name's kind of escapes me right now. Not necessarily a yoga teacher, but someone who studied in depthly the anatomy of meridians.
Ah.
So Paul Grilly is phenomenal. He has also been really influential in me in studying yoga anatomy.
Mm.
Because there's some big myths out there in yoga.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I finally wrote an article called The 5 Myths of Alignment. Because there's a lot of misconception about and confusion about alignment. And I intuitively realized that when I was practicing, but Paul Grilly confirmed that scientifically.
Mm.
And so he's got a yoga, I think it's called Anatomy of, I'm not sure, you can Google it.
Yeah, I'll definitely Google it, and I'll list it in the show notes afterwards.
Yeah.
So tell me more about your article that you written. Where is it publicized, or where can I find it?
Yeah, it's been published in the several yoga magazines, so you can Google it. It's called The 5 Myths of Alignment.
Okay, cool.
And
I'll share that with the Yoga Revealed family as
well. Yeah, kind of like the myths, you know, for example, one of the myths is that if you're not in proper alignment, you'll hurt yourself. Or, and I go into that in depthly, or, you know, you're born in perfect alignment, and as you get older, you end up becoming misaligned. That's a myth as well, because we're all actually born asymmetrical.
Mm-hmm.
No one's born in perfect alignment.
Exactly.
I mean, I've spoken to baby pediatricians, and they say they notice that when the baby comes out, there's dominant sides already.
Mm-hmm.
And one area seems more open, and one area is more closed.
Mm-hmm.
Another big myth is that when you finally get into perfect alignment, your prana flows freely. And that's a big myth because every yoga posture actually is kind of like a hose, like a garden hose.
Mm-hmm.
When you get into a yoga posture, you actually bend the garden hose.
Mm-hmm.
So it actually does the opposite. It doesn't open up prana, it closes prana.
Mm.
And then, so you're in the pose, the prana is shut off. There's pressure building. And when you come out of the pose, you open the hose. And that's when the release goes on. But people think, oh, if I'm in proper alignment, I'm opening up. No, yoga postures actually close.
Mm.
It's the opposite. And build, that closing is important because it stimulates pressure on either end. That's why if you hold any yoga posture long enough, eventually you'll go numb.
Yep.
Because you're closing prana.
Yeah.
But people are really confused. They think, oh, when I get in perfect alignment, energy, I'll be like a Christmas tree and I'll just light up.
Bursting out of this warrior too.
But really every yoga posture is meant to, you know, stimulate and...
Mm-hmm. Bring that energy to a certain place. And then when you release out of that posture and go into your Shavasana, then you have that...
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So there's some really fun stuff in that I've intuitively kind of felt, and then Paul Grilly was able to put it into a real language, of a scientific language, anatomy language.
Definitely.
It's kind of like the anatomy of self acceptance.
Definitely. Mm-hmm. So tell me more about
that. Was a collaboration that really changed me.
Yeah.
My collaboration with Paul Grilly. But there are so many teachers that I invited. The Swenson brothers, Dave and Doug.
Yeah, they're amazing.
Amazing people. I got a chance to collaborate with them. And I did invite some Iyengar yoga teachers, Manuso Manos and Mary Dunn.
Mm.
And so it was really wonderful collaboration that I noticed was the biggest shift in my career, if you will.
Yeah, and how often did you continue those?
Done, you know, conferences. I started doing that first one in Ann Arbor, and then since then I've done probably 30 conferences, big conferences in Las Vegas and Austin, Texas, and Miami.
Wow.
In Chicago.
Do you still do them to this day?
So it's been about 3 years I stopped doing them and started focusing more on teacher training.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm sort of getting an itch to want to do another one. So maybe you, Joan, and I can talk about that later.
Yeah, definitely. I would love to talk about that.
Yeah.
Certainly. Well, collaboration continues.
Yeah.
Awesome. So now that you've kind of segued into the teacher training, why do you feel it's so important to focus your energy now on teacher training?
Well, because of my collaboration with Lifetime Fitness, this big company that introduces more people to yoga than maybe any other organization in America, it was really important that I help train their teachers on how to teach yoga. And how to teach other people how to teach yoga.
Mm.
So that's really where my focus is now. Not necessarily teaching people how to teach yoga, but now teaching people how to teach other people how to teach yoga.
Yeah.
Do you see the
teaching different? The teachers.
Teaching the teachers.
Certainly.
And that's been a real passion for me.
Can you tell me more about the reach and the vastness of the Lifetime Fitness influence?
Well, right now they have 120 locations. Each location is pretty big. They average between 8,000 and 10,000 members. So you're talking over a million people.
Wow.
For sure. And
and how many classes per day are they offering?
And so
for
they
yoga?
Have over, they average over 10, at least 10 to 15 teachers per location. So you're talking over 1,000 teachers, probably like 1,500 teachers that that I am in collaboration with, if you will.
Mm.
And so it's a pretty big reach.
Wow. And so are you not only like doing their teacher trainings, but you're also like showing them different sequences to use?
Yeah, so when I first was brought into Lifetime, they had 30 different kinds of types of yoga class descriptions. It was kind of all over the board, and they sort of wanted to narrow down a brand. And as you probably know, vinyasa yoga is the most popular style of yoga in the country. Mm-hmm. More people practice vinyasa yoga than any other style.
Yeah.
And that's what kind of, that's what style they were leaning towards. And then they found that my approach to vinyasa yoga was the one that they wanted to go with. So I was very fortunate to bring this unique style of yoga, which is not so much based on the sequencing, but it's more based on the approach to the whole class. So the way the class is broken up into 7 doorways. And any teacher can really bring their spirit to it. And even there's some sequencing is important, but these doorways are more important. And the first doorway that we teach teachers how to create is called the doorway of sacred space. And that's about that's usually the first 5 minutes of class. And that's where you allow students to come as they are. Where you give them permission just to start where they are, not where you want them to be, not where they think they're supposed to be. It's a way to sort of disarm. There's a lot of intimidation in yoga. They think that they have to be a certain way. So it's a way to just allow them to truly relax around the moment as it is.
Yeah, I remember in the beginning of your class, we were, you know, laying face down, just with, you know, allowing the legs to come open and just relax the hips. And it was very grounding, very, very relaxing. And it really brought forth like that subtlety of breath, because you really can feel the inhales and the exhales as you're there on your chest.
That's the whole idea, is just being with whatever you brought in. You know, some teachers come in and they say, okay, let go of whatever you brought in. No, you know, leave at the door what you don't want, you know, what happened earlier. In the sacred space, no, you just be with whatever you brought in. If you brought in, if you just smoked a cigarette, then feel that. Mm-hmm. If you just got into a fight with your, you know, significant other, then you just feel that.
Yeah.
So it's not about trying to change or leave something out. It's just being present with
what is. I like that.
And in the language of the Buddha, it's called yatha buddha, as it is.
And what's the second?
In the second door, so once you're able to know that, if that's all you did is just come onto your yoga mat and just lie there. And I had one student for 3 months, that's all she did was come onto a yoga mat and lie there. She didn't do anything else. We taught the whole class, and she was just lying on her belly, kind of like you were mentioning, for the whole class for 3 months.
Mm-hmm.
And then after 3 months, she started to slowly participate more and more. But she came up to me and she said, Johnny, I just want to let you know that this was the only place that I could come and just be with myself. You see, my mother passed away, and I had no... My relationship with my mom was so powerful that I felt like I had, you know, no strength. And I just needed to mourn her loss. And everywhere I went, people try to fix me. Oh, it's okay, you can let it go now. And they try to make me better, or they try to... And this was the only place I could go and just be with that feeling. That's sacred space.
Yes.
And so sacred space could last the whole class, or... It could last 3 months, or it could just be the first 5 minutes. But you give that kind of permission.
Yes.
Because you never know what someone's walking in with, and you just let them have that permission. So that's a stage. And that could be taken, like, so many different ways. Some teachers can come in and create sacred space by simply chanting. So it's really, you see how it's a template?
Yes.
That allows a teacher to bring in what they're feeling at the moment. One... class I came in, it was the next morning, the next day after the Sandy Hook Elementary School. Is that the
right? Oh, yeah, the shooting.
the shooting.
Yeah.
And I walked into the class and you could just feel the sadness
mm-hmm.
and the heaviness within the students in the class, the whole room. So it's just about, instead of me coming in out, oh, turning on rap music and let's go. And it's sacred space is just honoring the moment.
Mm-hmm.
That moment, there was just heaviness, there was sadness. So we all held hands. So sacred space can be a lot of different things, but it's mostly being true to the moment as it is. Even if that means disappointing somebody else.
Yeah.
Second doorway. Are we going to try to get through all seven doorways?
Yeah, going through all seven.
Okay. Second doorway is once you establish that sacred space, then you, as a teacher, you can start to give direction. And the second one, we call it igniting the spirit. And igniting the spirit kind of goes through the spirit in many ancient languages, Hebrew, Arabic, Latin, even the Hawaiian. The word for spirit is the same word as what? Breath.
Mm-hmm.
So the second doorway is igniting the spirit, igniting your breath. Because the breath is the bridge that takes us from where? Outside to inside.
To inside, yeah.
From thinking to feeling. It's the bridge from our head to our heart.
Mm-hmm.
So we ignite the spirit because we want, as a teacher, we don't really want to, we want to speak, we want to have a relationship with the student's nervous system,
yeah,
with their being. So the breath allows us to have that dialogue, that feedback mm-hmm. with the nervous system. So the next part, that doorway, and some, that doorway is not easy to open, is getting the students to start to pay attention to their breathing and even maybe introducing Ujjayi Pranayama or some more powerful breathing.
Yes.
It could be, you know, again, it's open to the teacher. If you want to do alternate nostril breathing, if you want to do Bayo Kumbhaka,
mm-hmm.
exhale retention, or Antara Kumbhaka, or just Ujjayi Pranayama, or just full, complete yoga breaths, but it's just bringing attention to the breath and igniting that spirit of the breath. Because
mm-hmm.
once you start really breathing like that, I remember I had a student come up to me and say, Johnny, I just took the best class I've ever had in over 5 years. I'm like, really? She goes, I just had the best class I've ever had in 5 years with you. And she goes, it wasn't your music. She said, it wasn't your sequencing. She said, it wasn't even you. It was the first time I stayed with my breath for the whole hour.
Hmm.
I was like, wow. So that alone, that doorway alone, if you just open those two doorways alone, students will leave, can have a powerful experience. So sometimes I'll just say, this is a breathing class. Everything else is optional. And that's not easy. I mean, try it. If you try just to really pay attention to your breathing for the whole hour without any interruption, very challenging.
Definitely.
Very few students can accomplish that. To me, that's a huge thing. So that igniting the spirit is huge.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've been to yoga classes where the breath's not even mentioned. It's not even a doorway.
Yeah.
It's a kind of a secondary thing. To us, breath is primary, everything else is secondary.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's a huge doorway. Once that doorway is open, then that takes you to the next doorway, which we call lighting your fire, lighting your sensual fire.
Mm.
And that is starting to warm up. It's actually the biggest part of class, warm up. Sun A, Sun B, we use Ashtanga yoga. Sun A, Sun B, but it could be any kind of, it doesn't have to necessarily be that. It could be other, but you start to warm up.
Mm-hmm.
You start to connect the breath with movement. That's vinyasa.
Mm-hmm.
You start to link the breath with movement. It could be cat-cow to start. But you start to connect the breath with movement. That's a big doorway. We usually do spend the most out of the whole hour, the most amount of time warming up. And if you think about it, like, I'm a big sports fan, basketball fan in particular, and I'll go to basketball games early to see the players warm up. A lot of the players spend more time warming up than they actually do in the game.
Yeah.
I mean, you're a soccer player. I don't know if that's true for you as well.
Definitely. I mean, in the beginning of my career, I really found that if I didn't warm up, I would pull my muscles. And I had tons of Achilles, ankle injuries and tons of calf injuries. That's like my weak point, I would say, because I wouldn't warm up. And early on, I figured out, hey, I got to warm up. I got to stretch out my ankles. I got to roll my ankles around. I've got to, you know, really massage the back of my heels, the back of my Achilles, the back of my calves, so that when I get in the game, I don't have to worry about it.
Absolutely. So we spend most of the class, as you took, Sun A we did, Sun B, and then we created a longer sequence, Sun C, and it was all warming up. Mm-hmm. That was a good 30 minutes of class. Did you get warmed up?
Oh, I was warm. I will have you know that after the first sequence that we did with just those lunges, and then going from the lunges to the warriors, and then from the warriors... That was
the second. I mean, the first sequence with Sun A was the mountain pose to, you know, Sun A.
Yes.
And then the Sun B was the second warm up was the lunges.
Mm-hmm.
And then the third was the boats.
Yes, the boat pose was incorporated in that too.
The third. So, but anyways, that was, you know, it's, you know, preparation meets opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
Even I know some businessmen, they'll spend more time preparing for the deal than actually signing the deal.
Mm.
So it's really just taking your time to warm up, bringing this, I often will say, this pot of water to a slow boil.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's a big doorway, taking your time and really making sure that that a day does not go by where you don't bring yourself to, where you don't light yourself on fire.
I like that, definitely.
And I found from my own, talking about wellness, from my own experience by creating my own yoga fever every morning, I rarely ever go to bed with a fever at night.
Mm-hmm.
It's really quite amazing. It does ignite your immune system.
Totally.
So that's the third doorway, warming up. And then the fourth doorway is, it's kind of like if you've ever been camping and you want to use that as a metaphor, the sacred space is creating the pit.
The fire pit.
The ignite the spirit is making sure there's lots of oxygen. You know, you have to be in it. The lighting the fire, the warm-ups, is the kindle.
Mm-hmm.
And then what do you do after you get the fire going, you got the kindle going? Then
put those big logs on it.
Put those logs.
Yep.
and that's the next stage. That's the fourth stage.
Mm-hmm.
It's adding some longer holding, but not the in longer holding muscular energetic poses.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. The standing posture. Yeah, we did. Twists.
We did, I think, King Dancer.
Yep.
Held it for a little while, you know. So.
Yeah, and then.
And then
Utthita. Standing leg, Utthita.
Hasta Padangustasana,
yep.
Letter C.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think. Then after the fourth doorway, after you. It's kind of like you can go back to the campfire analogy. After you get that fire raging,
mm-hmm.
then you can utilize the fire.
Yeah.
You can make spaghetti. So then that's when we go into yin. You take those noodles, you put the water's boiling, you put them in there.
And you just
sit in it.
Yep.
You sit in it. I think we did refining heroes, kramasana.
Oh, we also did hanumanasana.
Yes.
Which I love because so often I go to classes and that posture is never offered. And it's like, you know, it's great to do Ardha Hanumanasana, like, you know, half of the pose, but why not offer the full pose, you know? Why not offer the full expression of the posture so that we can really feel where our bodies are, you know?
Well, that's kind of where I broke away from Ashtanga, too, because Ashtanga says, until you master one pose, you can't go to the next.
Mm-hmm.
And then it became really clear to me that it's really not about mastering the pose. That's what it's about, mastering the mind. The poses are just tools for yoga, citta, vritti, niroda.
Definitely.
And so many systems of yoga focus so much on the posture. The posture is the aim. So many classes are designed to build up to a climatic pose.
Mm-hmm.
And the focus is the posture. And they're missing something. Not to say there's not benefit in that. There's people get more confident, they love playing with and developing mastery of these poses. But if they're missing something, if they don't see that, that's not the end, that's just a means
mm-hmm.
to quiet the mind, to change the habit pattern of the mind. And that's where my practice really shifted, is after that 10-day, coming back to that 10-day Vipassana meditation. Because then I got off the posture race. Mm. It wasn't about mastering the poses anymore. It was about mastering my mind. And it changed my whole yoga practice from using my body to get into the poses to using the poses to get into my body. It seems kind of a simple play in words, but if you really understand that, it changes your whole practice.
That's the truth. I really like the way that that's put.
Yeah.
Because that's the truth of it, is that these poses are used to get into the body, because then we can fully assess the awareness that we bring to the body.
Beautiful. That's it.
Yeah.
That's the gift, is the awareness. Mm. But if you're so like focused on, now,
how does this pose look?
Yes.
Oh, I'm doing it. Yeah.
So the sixth doorway then is finishing. We call it surrendering. You know, moving towards closing, finishing posture, surrendering. Mm-hmm. And then the seventh and final doorway is, if you really opened up and went through all those doorways, the seventh doorway just opens naturally. Mm-hmm. It just swings wide open. And that's the doorway of gratitude, mm-hmm. of loving kindness. And you're there in Shavasana, you come up and you have so much love and good feelings to share.
Yeah, it's that after yoga glow.
Yeah.
Definitely. I love that. The seven, seven doorways?
Doorways.
Yeah. That's beautiful.
Of teaching this methodology. Everybody will, you know, has their own methodology, but this methodology of vinyasa is not so much about this, you know, having a cookie cutter sequence, mm-hmm. but it's more about the,
having an outline, a structure,
a template of doorways that you're passing through. And so it's not always, it doesn't always happen. You don't pass through all seven doorways in a class. That's the idea, but sometimes some people will just stay and lie on their mats for the whole class. Some people can just stay in child pose and breathe the whole class. Just under the, it doesn't necessarily mean that you get through all seven doorways, but it's quite an experience if you do get through all seven of them.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. So you're now teaching this to over 1,000 teachers, wow, nationwide.
Yeah, and there's been plenty of studios that have opened up trying to copy this. That have taken class from me, and I want to bring this to LA. So we just had a couple studios in LA just open up recently in the spirit of this style, but it's not easy.
There will always be those. You know, they say that copying is the best compliment.
Yeah, so it is. It's exciting to see this style of yoga now popping up in the world capital of yoga, LA.
Yeah.
But it's not an easy, it really takes a while to develop mastery of those doorways, of really opening them up.
Definitely. And what would you say now is the future of, what is the name of this style?
There's no trademark, no copyright, no name.
Oh, wow. So it's just something
vinyasa.
That you've...
I mean, Lifetime calls it Life Power. Mm-hmm. You know, that's the name of their thing, but I've never put a name on it.
Wow. So you're just offering it as...
Yeah, I feel like there's a danger in putting a name on it and tying it to some... It kind of doesn't... It just never felt good to try to label it. Mm-hmm. So... And it's evolved. I used to call it the stages of yoga. Now it feels better to say the doorways. So it keeps evolving anyways and changing.
Yeah, as yoga always does. That's beautiful. So, I mean, this basically brings us exactly where we need to be, which is to talk about the future of what your plan is for your yoga.
For my personal practice or
personal practice, continued expansion, continued teachings. It sounds like, I mean, you're bringing up four awesome children who are yogis as well. I've met Jonah already, who's the eldest of your sons, and he's an amazing teacher.
Thank you. Yeah, it's just, I don't know that I have a plan. I've never had a business plan. It's all been sort of very beautiful, organic unfolding.
Mm-hmm.
But I definitely would like to hold the space for whatever Jonah wants to move into. Anything I can do to help, you know, this understanding of yoga grow. So I don't know that I have any real big plans for the future,
mm-hmm.
other than just, you know, my daily morning practice myself,
mm-hmm.
and then helping teachers, you know, develop and become, you know,
the best that they can be.
Yes,
definitely. That's mm-hmm. awesome. Well, we always conclude with a few golden nuggets, those like very essential teachings that we can share with the Yoga Revealed podcast listeners. And this family of Yoga Revealed listeners is very much so, you know, rooted in listening to this, because there's so many great things that we can talk about, but it's always those golden nuggets that stick with us.
Golden nuggets. I would say the golden nugget, if you're practicing yoga, you're listening to this, and it's kind of helpful, a teacher's helpful to give you some signs if you're moving in the right direction. So I've noticed there's three different places you can end up in your yoga practice that you can look for. One is an ego-centered practice, which is kind of like what you were saying, am I doing it right? Do I look good? Just be mindful. Notice that it's not necessarily a bad thing. It's often a doorway to something else. Mm-hmm. But there's an ego-centered practice. Then the next step is the breath-centered practice,
mm-hmm.
where the ego's still there. Am I doing it right? Do I look good? But you're starting to give more importance to your breath.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually, at some point, maybe the breath becomes stronger than your judgments. Your breath and your practice become stronger than your old tape recordings of I'm not good enough, or I'm not doing this right, or I'm too fat, or I'm too thin. So, you know, it might start out kind of ego-centered, then you become breath-centered. And then the third circle, if you have one circle, is the ego-centered, then the bigger circle is the breath-centered, and then there's a bigger circle around that circle, and that's the heart-centered yoga practice, where your practice is about generating unconditional love towards yourself and others. And yeah, the breath is there, but it actually even loses its power, and it's more just about the heart.
The heart shines through.
That's for me the signs that my yoga practice is working and moving in the right direction.
I like that. Very much so.
Ego-centered, breath-centered, heart-centered. And it can, sometimes you can fall back, but it's kind of like, okay, well, this is where I am today.
Yeah, definitely. Blessings. Thank you so much, Johnny Kest, for being here on the Yoga Revealed podcast today and for sharing your wisdom and love with these amazing listeners and all the people around the world who are listening to this today. We are greater for your knowledge and very much so grateful for your wisdom.
Namaste.
Namaste.
Thank you for tuning into this episode of the Yoga Revealed podcast with Johnny Kest. Make sure to check out the Center for Yoga at centerforyoga.com for more details on Johnny's upcoming classes, travel schedule, and amazing teachings worldwide. For more information on a Life Power class near you, log on to lifetimefitness.com to drop into a class sequenced by Johnny at your local Lifetime Fitness gym. Until next time, Yoga Revealers, live light, shine bright. Blessings indeed. Peace.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.